25% of our annual budget comes from listeners like you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting CKUW 95.9 FM at Fundrive.
Listening to Bikini Drive-In on CKUW 95.9 FM Winnipeg. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning, listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. And it's Fun Drive time. So for the next 2 weeks, we are again asking for your donations to enable another great year of community radio. We are very excited for the year ahead. Our goal for 2021 is $60,000 in community support, and I believe we are already up to $10,000. So whether you tune in to hear new music, community news, or to learn about horror movies, CKUW is here for you every day. Fun Drive is when we need listeners to contribute back to keep us on the air. Most of our programming is remote and pre-recorded this year, so if you can, please consider donating to fundrive.ckuw.ca. And today I'm joined again by Allison Lang. Thanks so much for joining me on the show.
My pleasure.
Allison is a writer and editor based in Toronto. She writes for Rue Morgue and wrote a book called Women with Guts in the Rue Morgue Library. She also makes zines and is currently working on part two of her Music Men Ruin For Me series. Along with Esther Splett, she co-hosts a bi-monthly Facebook movie series called Toxic Femmes Films, focusing on movies about hags, harpies, lesbians, sluts, and monstrous women. Yeah, just a little bit more about Fun Drive and my history with CKUW. So I've been hosting Bikini Drive-Ins for about 2 years now. And before that, I co-hosted the music show The Tonic with Mike Furnish and Sam Doucette. So I've been with CKUW for a long time, like maybe 7 years or so, which is complete insanity. And I just think it's a really special place. The staff and volunteers work really hard researching, interviewing, putting together playlists, and hosting great shows every single day. And I understand it's a weird time for everybody right now, but if you can, please donate to CKUW so we can keep bringing you listener-driven radio. And my goal today is to raise $400 for Bikini Drive-In, so please donate to fundrive.ckuw.ca. And Allison, I learned this last week that you also had a community radio show.
It's true. It's true. Not a show as reputable as Bikini Drive-In, but less than half. But I was a volunteer at CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston out of Queen's University for a few years. While I was in undergrad, a while ago, but. That station is still active, but yeah, I had, as I told Olivia last week, I had a hip hop show, which I had no right to have, but thanks to the open-mindedness and like warmth of the community there, I did it with my friend Josh Goodbaum. It was called The Message after the Grandmaster Flash song. We were really not conversant in hip hop, and it was sort of an education of sorts to get a little more conversant in that. And we did it in real time on the air. And
oh my gosh.
Suffice it to say, I certainly hope those archives of our show are archived where they should be and are not easily discoverable. But it was a wonderful, like, I loved everyone I met there. And like as Olivia said, there's nothing like community radio for people who are just like hugely impassioned and just like the level of involvement and commitment based purely on the love of what you're doing and you know your friendships with each other and all that kind of stuff, all that growth and learning is I don't think you can get that anywhere else. It's a really singular experience.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, super important. So I wish you guys the best with the funding drive, and I hope people donate.
Yes, and people can donate at fundrive.ckuw.ca. And today we are covering the eternally weird and tragically misunderstood Cherry Falls from the year 2000, which we are screening along with a few shorts on Saturday, February 13th. And you can join the Toxic Femmes Facebook group for all the info.
I remember the story like this. It was a dark and scary night, kind of like tonight.
25 years ago, a horrible crime was committed in the town of Cherry Falls. Now.
You haven't heard about Rod and Stacy?
Did they break up?
Break up! Wake up! They're dead!
What their parents hid in the past.
Nobody has seen or heard of her for over 25 years.
Mom, do you know anything about a woman named Laura Lee Sherman?
No. Why?
Is haunting the present.
Who is it?
Is your mom home?
No.
She didn't tell you I was coming by.
Four teenagers have been killed. A fifth viciously attacked.
All victims appeared to be virgins.
Everyone's decided to take themselves off the endangered species list and have sex.
I need to ask you a personal question. About how far you going, base-wise? Can you go further?
Tell me about Laura Lee Sherman, tell me!
That was 25 years ago.
Do you think she goes all the way?
Doubt it.
You better come, come on!
This is my post, I can't just split!
Cherry Falls.
Did you want your first time to be something beautiful, something romantic?
Local music, local issues, local voices. It's all here on CKUW every day of the year. Now during Fund Drive, we need your support. Call 204-774-6877 or go to funddrive.ckuw.ca to pledge now. Cherry Falls is a 2000 American slasher film directed by Jeffrey Wright and starring Brittany Murphy, Jay Moore, and Michael Bayne. The plot focuses on a small Virginia town where a serial killer is targeting teenage virgins. Allison, what is your history with Cherry Falls?
Because I read about Cherry Falls a lot when it came out and when it was in production. And I was like, oh my God, like an ant, you know, a slasher satire. And you know, like everyone else, I was hugely into the 90s. Slasher boom, starting with Scream and moving on. Like that was, I was in high school, you know, during most of that era. And so all of those movies were very impactful for me. But I didn't see Cherry Falls until a few years ago after Alex West published a book about the 90s teen horror cycle, the podcaster and writer. Who you're going to be talking about later in the show as well. But yeah, her book is incredible. It's just an overview of all the films that came out around that time and really gives them a lot of analytic weight and heft given sort of the time period that they were released. And I think it's a really indispensable read for anyone who's even remotely interested in that time period or interested in the evolution of horror movies, really, because people don't talk about those movies as much as they should. But anyway, I read her piece about Cherry Falls in that book and I was like, damn, Alex, like I gotta watch this movie. Like I remember reading about it years ago. So I watched it and I was like, this movie is like real chaos. Chaos. And it's so like similar but different from the movies in that cycle, which I think is very intentional. And it is sort of like emblematic, I think, of the ending of that decade. Like it's just like a weird, it's really weird. I really enjoyed it. And then a couple years ago I volunteered at a video store in Toronto called Eyesore Cinema, and they have a cinema in the back, and we had a friend of mine, Simon Borer, and I decided we were going to do a 90s horror night. So we as I told Olivia last week, I think we screened we like played a DVD on the tiny projector in that back room to about 25 people.
That's a screening that counts.
Well, micro screening perhaps. But we played Urban Legend, God bless.
Oh my gosh, precious. A fave, such a cozy movie.
It is a cozy horror movie.
Cherry Falls also has like some cozy elements to it as well.
I would there's definitely there's a comforting coziness to a lot of these slashers from that time, or horror movies from this period. For sure. So it went over very well. We had a really great time with both films, and people were laughing their asses off. I'm going on too long, but we had a break between the films where we actually had people do things they did in the Urban Legends movie. So we had a Pop Rocks and Coke drinking competition. And people like, anyway, it was very stupid.
That sounds so much fun.
It was really fun. If this pandemic ever ends, I'd love to do something similar again, because there's something about these movies that just really, people really like them, and they're just very enjoyable to watch, especially in a group setting. Like it's,
Definitely. Cherry Falls was, on high rotation the summer that I turned 14. So I watched the Cherry Falls and Dracula 2000 and Moulin Rouge. There was just those three movies. So it will always just be very extremely, extremely special to me, even though it has like some problematic elements and is completely absurd. I just really, really love it so much. I'm so happy to be talking about it. So I didn't know this, but Cherry Falls was never released theatrically in the United States. Instead, it aired on TV, which is very, very strange to me. And this was due to several cases in the Senate about violence in films after the Columbine High School shooting in April of 1999. And I have a quote here. Due to ongoing censorship issues with the MPAA, the film was never given a theatrical release in the United States and was released as a TV movie on the USA Network. As a result, Cherry Falls is the most expensive television movie ever produced, with a budget of around $14 million. So strange. And Cherry Falls was initially written by Ken Seldon as a satire, but director Jeffrey Wright wanted to make a more serious horror movie. So he cut out a lot of the comedy and made it much more gory. So this, along with entire sections of the film being cut, is probably why the film has kind of this like weird, disjointed tone throughout.
In Cherry Falls, which is a town in Virginia, things are going along, you know, normally people dredging or joying or skipping about their lives, and their lives are disrupted. A little earthquake happens, and a serial killer is on the loose killing some virgins, and people have to learn to deal with that and discover how that's happening. There's so many levels to this. I don't think you could call it a horror movie. Because I think it's just it's a movie. It's a story. And it has so many layers of different emotions and wackiness. It's by far the funniest one that I read. It's so different from any of the other movies, in my opinion, of its genre that have floated in front of my face in the past couple of years. And I thought, oh, this is cool. This one I actually want to be a part of. I hope they enjoy it. I hope people are affected in some way. I hope that people can find the comedy in it.
So yeah, I'm just going to give a little review on slashers. I haven't covered a slasher movie in a little while, so this is exciting. So as Allison mentioned, Cherry Falls exists in this like post-Scream slasher revival period. So think I Know What You Did Last Summer, Valentine, Urban Legend, etc. And in her book, Men, Women, and Chainsaws, Gender in the Modern Horror Film, Carol J. Clover describes slashers as sharing several elements. The killer is a psychotic product of a sick family, but still recognizably human. The victim is a beautiful, sexually active woman. The location is not home, at a terrible place. The weapon is something other than a gun. The attack is registered from the victim's point of view and comes with shocking suddenness. So a couple more elements of slasher films. There's a mysterious killer stalking and killing victims sequentially. Violent stabbing, slashing movements. Killers are usually the fixed element of many slasher films, while the victims are interchangeable in any given series. There's also a shifting point of view and identification between the final girl and the killer. And according to Clover, the final girl in many movies shares common characteristics. She is typically sexually unavailable or virginal and avoids the vices of the victims, like illegal drug use or drinking, just partying. She sometimes has a unisex name, such as Avery, Chris, or Sydney. Occasionally, the final girl will have a shared history with the killer. The final girl is the sort of investigating consciousness of the film, moving the narrative forward, and she exhibits intelligence, curiosity, and vigilance. Another trope of slashers, particularly 1980s, is death by sex, where sex scenes are shortly followed by violence, with the participants being murdered in gruesome ways. And I think Cherry Falls subverts some of these slasher elements while also kind of falling victim to some of the more problematic tropes, which we will cover later on. I have a quote from Alex's book, the 1990s teen horror cycle, Final Girls and a new Hollywood formula. Cherry Falls continues to deviate from the traditional Reagan era politics, which seemingly equated sex to death that influenced slashers in the 1980s heyday. The film invites its young characters to engage willingly and consensually in sexual intercourse. This conceit flies in the face of the fear that sex can lead to disease or unwanted pregnancies and is therefore best avoided. Yeah, how do you feel about slasher tropes, and how do you see Cherry Falls at subverting these more traditional tropes or stereotypes?
Yeah, it's pretty much what Alex said. And even the description of the film, the idea of a serial killer who preys on virgins is interesting. Yeah, it's such an interesting inversion for, I grew up on Nightmare on Elm Street, which I think, and we'll talk about this later too, I think about how this movie shares a lot of similarities, at least with the first film in that franchise, with the idea of atoning for the sins of your parents kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely, I really like that aspect of Cherry Falls, that it is, it's markedly less conservative than even some of the 90s slashers, what I mean? It kind of takes the stuff that was great about sort of the 90s slasher revival, if you're a fan of that revival, intelligent characters, snarkiness, just self-awareness, male characters that have some agency and are, have their own moments of strength and power. And then you also have this idea that sexuality becomes something that's really joyful in the university, in the high school. It becomes something very sort of comedically gleeful. And I think Alex talks about this in her book too, the scene where the school's slut is holding court Cindy. With a group. Yes, that's right. Yeah. And she's well, everyone, she's explaining to them how to lose their virginity, and she's become a hero. Mm-hmm. The way men who are sexually adventurous and have a lot of conquests become these heroic figures so often in these movies. So I like that inversion a lot. That part is really appealing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It is also interesting to how the idea of virginity, and also how sexuality is policed. There's obviously a moral panic about female sexuality, and the idea of teens having sex is seen as the worst thing on earth. And a lot of those sort of sentiments are coming from Principal Sisler, who you later find out is a rapist. And it's, so it's just the call is coming from inside the house, Principal Sisler.
Good afternoon. This is Stan Michaels coming to you live from George Washington High School, the epicenter of what can only be described as the senseless slaughter of innocents here in Cherry Falls, Virginia. In the last 3 days, 4 teenagers have been killed, a 5th viciously attacked. Certain local officials believe the killer, still at large, may be targeting teenage high school virgins. And now students here on campus are rumored to have organized a sex party to actually eliminate themselves as possible targets.
Attention, this is your principal speaking. It has come to my notice that certain individuals have taken it upon themselves to organize a wild party tonight. I want you to know that any George Washington High student attending this gathering will be disadvantaged by every penalty it is in my power to impose.
Thank you.
This, of course, has local school officials at a loss as to how to handle the situation. We'll get comments now from students and find out.
This is a special time for CKUW. Our annual fund drive is on the air. From now until Friday, February 19th, you can call in and make a pledge to support campus and community access radio in Winnipeg. Once a year, we ask for listener donations to help us sustain the volunteer-made programming we showcase every day. Make the investment in your community now. Call 204-774-6877 or visit fundrive.ckuw.ca. By pledging, you support a volunteer organization that helps people find their voice, develop technical savvy, gain employment skills and references, and contribute to the wider community in a meaningful way. When you pledge $70, we can send you our limited edition Fund Drive t-shirt as a wonderful thank you gift. Please call now at 204-774-6877 or visit fundrive.ckuw.ca to pledge your support. The volunteers at CKUW are invested in bringing you information and entertainment. We listen, research, interview, plan playlists, and write scripts. We put in the effort to make the difference in your life, and we ask you to make an investment in return. Please call in now and pledge. Call us at 204-774-6877 or donate at fundrive.ckuw.ca.
So yeah, so this film reminded me of The Purity Myth by Jessica Valenti. So I'm just going to read a quote from that book. There's a moral panic in America over young women's sexuality, and it's entirely misplaced. Girls Gone Wild aren't damaging a generation of women. The myth of sexual purity is. The lie of virginity, the idea that such a thing even exists, is ensuring young women's perception of themselves is inextricable from their bodies, and their ability to be moral actors is absolutely dependent on their sexuality. It's time to teach your daughters that their ability to be good people depends on their being good people and not whether or not they're sexually active. While boys are taught that the things that make them men, good men, are universally accepted ethical ideals, women are led to believe that our moral compass lies somewhere between our legs, literally. Whether it's the determining factor in our cleanliness and purity or the market of our character, virginity has an increasingly dangerous hold over young women. It affects not only our ability to see ourselves as ethical actors outside of our own bodies, but also how the world interacts with us through social mores, laws, and even violence. She also goes on to sort of discuss this like kind of sexual gatekeeping and how like the responsibility falls on teenage girls. And it is shown in Cherry Falls where the scene with Cindy sort of like holding court, it's like kind of this like militant scene. And she's talking to the other girls in her grade about like what to expect and what kind of birth control to use. And then after that scene, it immediately goes to like three doofuses in a car kind of like giggling to themselves, and like I don't know, it's just like very, very silly and done in a really interesting way. And like with the teenage boys, they're just like, there's so much posturing and so much insecurity.
You're talking about the insecurity of the boys in this
yeah like the way that Jessica Valenti is describing it. I kind of feel like the boys in the Cherry Falls universe are also just kind of like insecure, but like posturing and sort of like focusing that insecurity outward and sort of being shitty and rude, while the teenage girls kind of internalize those insecurities and that sort of power and shame and responsibility associated with their sexualities. Anyway, there are points where the teenage boys, you can see that they're just performing and they're actually like quite insecure about their sexualities too, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that scene, you raise a really good point. Like the scene where she goes to his house and she's wearing like the black see-through whatever, and It's interesting too because it's part of Brittany Murphy's very interesting performance in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this scene was written this way, but she's acting like a femme fatale. Like she's like, no more tiny, she's like, I don't care about tiny violins. I'm like, this character's not talk like this at all. What, like, Why is she talking like fucking Rita Hayworth?
Yeah.
She's like, oh. I love it. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, like, she's amazing. But it, and then her boyfriend is like, you know, when she's really like leaning in on him, and he's like, I just want to make sure you really want this. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny that, like, yeah, there's almost an inversion of what their typical roles would be, where mm-hmm. As you said, he suddenly becomes very insecure and is like, usually only see that kind of anxiety reflected as their encounter was at the beginning, where Brittany Murphy's like, oh, I don't know if I want this kind mm-hmm. of thing. And he's more predatory, and then suddenly she's like very predatory, and he's mm-hmm. like, he's like, I don't know. And then she's like, okay, well, I'm not, you know, she's like, whatever, I didn't think you were so, and she like puts on her heels and like walks out the door. It's just like such a funny, I'm not sure, that's like, that's the part of the thing of this whole movie, is that like, I think that inversion is intentional, but the way the scene is shot, it's like, so the energy is just like
very, it's very weird energy. She like has her toe like shoved in his mouth and is like yelling at him. It's like, it's so weird. And that's just like the weird tone of this movie, where there's just like awkward, weird, inappropriate sexual tension between every single possible character. It is so bizarre. I love it. It like makes no sense.
Like, how do we parse, I don't want to get ahead of anything, but like,
oh, please,
how do we parse like her relationship with her dad?
Oh my god, yeah.
Like,
what?
Where does that, like, where do you put that? Like, when they're doing like the,
like, self-defense, yeah.
And she seems like she doesn't want to be doing it either, but it could also be her slightly chaotic performance, where she's like, mm-hmm. Why don't you just give me some mace or some, She's like, why are we doing this? Yeah. And like, well, let's do that. And then they're like, collapse on each other in a total like romantic comedy trope.
Yeah.
And you're just like, why? Like, what's going on? And
I know.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a like Carol Clover reference too. Like, I don't know where she talks about, I think at one point in that book she talks about incest,
mm-hmm.
incestuousness, but anyway, I don't know.
Yeah. That's the thing with this movie. It's like, what was intentional and like, what sort of vibe are they going for? What tone? It is really all over the place.
Timmy, come on. This isn't funny anymore. I'll be your best friend, your very, 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 very best friend.
Yeah.
CKUW is always here for you, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But once a year, we need your help. It's Fund Drive Time, our annual appeal for listener support. Call in and pledge during your favorite show until February 19th, or pledge online at fundrive.ckuw.ca. As a thank you for gifts over $35, donors can opt for special Fund Drive incentives. Donate now at fundrive.ckuw.ca. Thanks to your generous gift, we're on our way to another successful Fund Drive and another year of amazing, uncompromised, independent radio for you. I don't have many notes on this, but another element of this movie that I really find interesting is like the idea of gossip. And maybe because I've been like locked in my house for a year, that I'm so like deprived of gossip that I just like picked up on it in this movie about like how all the students know like who's dating who, who's having sex with who, who's not, blah, blah, blah. And then there's also like Timmy, Brittany Murphy's friend, with the gossip column. But then there's also the teacher, Mr. J. Moore. I can't remember the teacher's name.
Oh, it starts with an M. I can't remember his last name.
Yeah. Like he exists in this kind of like, because he's like a young teacher and seems like kind of close with a lot of the students, but is also probably like picking up on whatever gossip is going around the school to then decide on who to kill.
Yeah, his access is very interesting because he could only, it's only as a teacher that he would know the level of, that he would be as aware of the students' sexual proclivities and experience, mm-hmm. know how to act afterwards. And that's sort of, that's such a betrayal mm-hmm. on so many levels. And I feel like you see that too with Brittany Murphy's like, or Jodie's rage towards him at the end, mm-hmm. Is just like, he's like this trusted figure that I think she also wants to sleep with.
Yeah, again, there's like sexual tension for no reason.
Yeah. And I don't know what they're trying to say about her character, that like she maybe has a father complex, mm-hmm. or something, and she's like just going for like inappropriate older men, and like,
yeah,
I'm not sure what that's trying to say, but it's definitely like his presence, and even though he's acting from like a severe trauma and mm-hmm. abuse, it's also like, yeah, it's a real violation mm-hmm. that he's able to know as much as he does about the students.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, speaking of, Mr. Marliston. So at the end, it is revealed that the killer is Mr. Marliston, played by Jay Moore, and he dresses up as a sort of like drag version of his mother while he is committing these murders. So that is obviously like a callback to Psycho, and yeah, where there was also like a killer dresses the mom. It could obviously be read as like a trans killer trope and actually like quite transphobic and like not a very nuanced sort of look at drag or cross-dressing or any sort of like gender identity. But I do like the certain sort of like feminine signifiers that like go into his presentation. So there's like the glossy red, long red nails, a mini skirt, this long wig, and these boots. So he's like impersonating his mom, but also has this like 90s like hot girl fantasy going on that I just thought was like looked cool, even though like that's probably like only like a superficial idea went into it. Yeah, what do you think?
That's really interesting. I never would have like clocked that, but yeah, it is true. It really lingers on certain aspects of his presentation, like mm-hmm. yeah, like the long, like the leather boots, and mm-hmm. yeah, it definitely focuses on his nails.
Mm-hmm.
I could be part of the misdirection of making us think the killer is Laura
Lee Sherman. Yeah.
But yeah, it is true, is that like he does represent a certain type of 90s woman who dressed like that at that mm-hmm. time. And I find Brittany Murphy's style in this movie really interesting too, because she doesn't typically look mm-hmm. the way she is styled in this film. She has like, she looks like a Tinder whore. Like to me,
she's
like the Courtney Love era. She has the super patchy bangs,
mm-hmm.
as does Jay Moore's character.
Yeah.
In a different way.
Yeah. But,
and she's very, she dresses in like a lot of baby doll kind of stuff. And she has sort of that kinder horror. She reminds me of Courtney Love in this movie a bit.
Yeah. And kind of like a Riot Girl sort of look, like she's wearing a mini skirt and combat boots. And yeah, it's an interesting sort of look for a final girl.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Yeah. It's like this movie's representation of different types of female presentation, mm-hmm. whether it's Jay Moore's character or whether it's Brittany Murphy or even her mom, who's kind mm-hmm. of just like this, you know, and at the beginning of the movie too, she's flirting with Brittany Murphy's boyfriend and she has like a femme fatale blonde look. And I don't have the ability to tie it together, I don't think, but like, yeah, there's like definitely different types of women in mm-hmm. this, like what the movie's trying to say about where they all fit in.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I have a quote here from a article by Emma Fraser called Why Cherry Falls and Its Final Girl Are Still Relevant Nearly 20 Years Later. So it's written a few years ago from sci-fi.com. In Cherry Falls, Laura Lee tries to go through the legal system, but it fails her because of how the community views these young men. That said, the original victim isn't the one getting her revenge in the end. It is the citizens of Cherry Falls who are at fault. So it is the citizens of Cherry Falls who must be punished. In a page straight out of Psycho, Leonard Marlison has been dressing up as his mother when he goes on his killing spree. And as with Norman Bates, played by Anthony Perkins, his mother was abusive. The product of rape, Laura Lee physically assaulted Leonard from a very young age, channeling her rage towards him. He makes the sheriff tell his daughter what happened that night, revealing his actual involvement and not the edited version. Yes, he was wasted, but he also participated and knew what he was doing. Instead of getting prosecuted, they became pillars of the community, and Leonard is enacting his revenge on his mother's rapist and the town that ignored this crime and exiled her, and therefore led to his trauma-filled childhood. The reason he is targeting virgins is to rob the rich parents of this town of the only innocence they have left, their precious virginal children. Like, on paper, that sounds so rad, but then the way that it kind of plays out, like, I think the ending kind of falls apart for me, and they do kind of like miss a few points. What do you think?
I agree. I honestly agree. I don't, it's weird too that Laura Lee herself is so erased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
We only see her in the rape scene, and she's really, she's not very visible. Like, we don't get to hear her speak or anything. And mm-hmm. then, it's interesting too when Jody's cop dad like goes to her house and like kind of looks around the basement, and it's like, this is the house where the woman he raped lives. This is the victim's house, mm-hmm. and yet he portrays it really as a monster's lair, like the horrifying basement with the nightmare crib,
mm-hmm.
where you know, Jay Moore's character was beaten and abused, kind mm-hmm. of thing. And it's just, yeah, it's just weird. Like, it's the movie's not very sympathetic towards her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is kind of like written off as like crazy and like abusive and evil.
Yeah.
And yeah, we don't really get to see her at all. Yeah, and like you mentioned earlier, the youth in this movie are paying for the mistakes of their parents made. So similar to Nightmare on Elm Street. And yeah, it is just like very dark that these sort of like violent young men later become like the sheriff and the principal and the authority figures in this small town, who are then policing the activities of the next generation.
So you have absolutely no idea why your father was in West Virginia. And you can think of no reason why Leonard Marlston committed these murders.
No.
And after all this, you can think of nothing else to tell me?
I think you've asked my daughter enough questions, Agent Braniel.
Well, thank you for now, ladies. You've been very cooperative.
Let's go.
I do find the ending very weird, like, given sort of like what the movie sets up and like how Brittany Murphy's character is like this investigating, is like finding all this stuff out about like her dad and the rest of the town. And then in the end, they decide to not tell the other police that Mr. Marliston is Laura Lee Sherman's son, or that, or any sort of connection between there, and therefore like protecting her dad's legacy rather than seeking any sort of like justice at all. And then like, yeah, further covering up this assault and then further perpetuating this like toxic masculinity that's like goes throughout this whole town and this whole school. So that was, I was kind of disappointed with that.
Yeah, it's like, I wondered if there were ways you could read that ending as like a depiction of the cyclical way in which this kind of behavior protects itself. The way, yeah, and the way like women are really culpable in rape culture too, to a certain degree. Yeah, and you know, is you know, the scene where Jody sees Laura Lee, or what she thinks might be Laura Lee, or might be Jay Moore across the street, is that like sort of emblematic of something that will haunt her family for the rest of their lives? I don't actually think any of that is true. I think the movie was just like, and let's tie this up somehow. There's no comment on like, you know, even if she did tell the truth, she's telling it to her father's fucking co-workers who are his cop buddies. Obviously they'll protect him because that is how law enforcement works. Like, they you know, they protect from within. And so maybe, like, I don't know if it's just ultimately a very just a glum ending where it's like, well, there wouldn't be any justice anyway, so she may as well just cover up for her beloved, you know, at the sake of like keeping this family unit together, even though her parents are obviously both like fucked in their own ways. And but yeah, it is, it, the ending is like, I watched it, I knew it was coming, so I was like watching it being like, oh, maybe this is like an indictment of like how things don't change. And then I was like, I really don't think,
doubt it,
that's what they're saying. So I think it's giving them too much credit. So yeah, like that, the ending kind of sucks, to be honest.
I wonder if that was rewritten, because it does kind of feel like tacked on and like very neatly wrapped up, that I wonder if they like changed it.
I don't know if it's like, you know, an ending where she gives up her dad, would that be too like disruptive?
Yeah.
Or, you know, or maybe people feel it wouldn't be in line with her character because she's a daddy's girl, obviously. That would make it more impactful, I would think.
Yeah, because she does go through like quite a journey. Like, she's researching this story and sort of finding out like what happened to Laura Lee Sherman, and she like believes her. She like, there's no time that she like doesn't believe that her father participated in it.
Even when her mom tells her the story, and her mom kind of tries to
like downplay it.
Yeah. And she says to her mom, she's like, you said it was a rape and you can't take that back. Like, it, like he raped her. Like, he committed a crime. And it's, you can't sugarcoat that as much as you try. It is, I'll be interested to see when we all watch it together on the 13th, how people will react to that ending, who have never seen it before, and if, you know, maybe that can further some discussion about the interpretation of that. It's very, I feel, I'm kind of going on a tangent, but I've been like reading and listening to a lot of people, a lot of women talking about rape revenge films right now in general, just after watching Promising Young Woman. Have you seen that yet?
No, not yet, but I've heard mixed reviews.
It's, people got, have many feelings, myself included. But one thing I am sort of getting from a lot of this discourse is that it's really, really hard, I think, to tell these sorts of stories in a way where there is a quote unquote satisfactory resolution that is perhaps reflective of reality.
And I
think that's also because when people are coming to these films with a wealth of experiences and yeah, and you know, your interpretation and your enjoyment, you know, and your satisfaction of your satisfaction with how things are resolved,
mm-hmm.
or how rapes are avenged,
yeah,
or not,
yeah,
in films, like it results may vary,
mm-hmm.
and it, yeah, it just seems like, yeah, it seems like this movie could have had an opportunity, I think, to make a more impactful statement. But
yeah,
and I appreciate the effort, because I don't think any other movies at this time in this particular subgenre of horror were making this bold of a statement.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, it doesn't sink the landing at all.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like part of the appeal of rape revenge films is the element of like fantasy, that there is going to be a revenge and like there is going to be like some form of like justice or like vengeance at the end. But then this, like, it's just further covered up and the cops don't care. Like, that's real life. Like, I don't need to see this in, like, a slasher movie, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah. There's a certain, yeah, I think that's why, you know, even movies like I Spit on Your Grave, mm-hmm. or Miss 45, which are directed by men,
mm-hmm.
are still, like, I'm like, yeah!
Yeah. Yeah, they have like a like an impactful ending, and like, yeah, there is this like fantasy to those movies, I think.
Yeah, the fantasy, it is satisfactory, even if that fantasy is reflected through kind of a male, mm-hmm. a male gaze. And then movies like, a lot of people have been talking about the movie MFA, which is a rape revenge film directed by a woman that, mm-hmm. I haven't seen yet. But I watched Revenge not too long ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I watched that for the first time a little while ago and then covered it for the show.
Oh yeah, you did.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. And I think, yeah, I just like that, you know, for better or for worse, and in equally messy ways too, but like women are making films that are joining this conversation.
Local music, local issues, local voices. It's all here on CKUW every day of the year. Now during Fund Drive, we need your support. Call 204-774-6877 or go to fundrive.ckuw.ca to pledge now. We do have a Cherry Falls screening coming up on Saturday, February 13th at 7:30 Winnipeg time. We will also be accepting donations for Justice for Black Lives Winnipeg. And please join the Toxic Femmes Facebook group for more information. Another thing that I'm kind of excited to talk about, I'll be hosting a speaker series discussion with the Faculty of Horror. So I'll be talking to Alexander West and Andrea Subasati on Thursday, February 25th at 7 p.m., again, Winnipeg time. The event is free and it will take place on the Uniters Facebook page. Super stoked for that. Yeah, so Allison, I just want to thank you for co-hosting with me again. It's been really cool to like get to know you and talk to you on the show. And through Bikini Drive-In and CKUW, I've been able to meet new people, make new internet friends, and have different guests on the show. I have been able to host live events and discussions. And yeah, I just really love horror movies. And so it's been really cool to have a platform to watch movies, do research, and get to talk to cool people about them. So thank you everyone for listening and for supporting the show. And if you're a fan of the show, I encourage you to visit fundrive.ckw.ca to donate. So yeah, happy Fun Drive, everybody. Thanks.
25% of our annual budget comes from listeners like you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting CKUW 95.9 FM at Fundrive.